All right, welcome back, Racing News, episode 83. It's going to turn out to be a big one here because we've just had Tim Walsh on from Dead Cow Gully, who is a race director, and he's going to talk us through what he saw of the weekend, last weekend, the Dead Cow Gully Last One Standing, a wonderful, wonderful race and a wonderful event that he keeps putting on there year after year. So he's going to give us a bit of an insight from a race director's point of view. We've also got Flirt With Dirt, which is happening as we speak. Kyle's going to get the messages. I think Ben Dineen is our reporter on the ground.
Live updates today in the podcast.
We'll talk about Wild Horse Criterium as well, a little bit maybe from the Goat Loop, and then a couple of other random things. But Kyle, we'll do Dead Cow Gully in about 10 minutes' time. We'll put that in. But let's go through training, Kyle. So how's the last... Well, it's been 3 weeks, I think. Two or 3 weeks. How's the training gone? What sort of sessions have you done? I know you love the weather, so how have you been feeling in the new weather?
The new weather is the best. My last couple of weeks have probably been a couple of the better weeks of training I've had for a while, which has been nice. I've actually got some good volume in. But, I think I've run nearly 250Ks in the last 2 weeks, Tom, which is probably the biggest fortnight of running I've done in a
long time.
That's
pro life.
It's good. I know. It must be this cool weather. But no, it's going well. So, everything's been ticking along nicely. Like the last couple of weeks, kind of just doing the normal Monday runs out on the trails with the group, which is always that nice way to start the week. I kind of don't know how I pull up from long runs because we just get this nice cruisy jog on a Monday morning, which is nice. So I very rarely go out and actually kind of do a longer road run after a long run, but it's a great way to start the week. So I enjoy that Monday morning. Yeah. And then the Tuesday ones, last week we did, 2 weeks ago we did 3K, 2K, 1K. This is a good one. Like it's a reasonably short session, but I'm trying to remember back to, I think it was Jack, Rob, and myself. And I think we ran something like the 3K was maybe like 3:18, 3:20. I think we're about 10 minutes on the dot. Probably ran 3:12s for the 2K and then just maybe low threes for the 1K. So that was kind of a session we just ticked off and not too much volume in the session, but ran some good splits, which was good. And then kind of normal midweek long run, which has been good. Friday we did, what was our Friday? So we did a 30-minute progression. Everyone else in the group hates these progression runs. I really enjoy the progression runs. I don't know if they would, I think they will just go out a little bit too hard. But anyway, did a 30-minute progression one, which was good. And then, Sundays have been good. I've done 2.5 hours the last couple of weeks, up close to 33Ks. So ticked off that kind of the Sunday before. And after, it was funny, after the Tuesday session, you'd probably have to look if you're on my Strava, the week before, I had a comment on my run from Tom Brimlow. Well, I had two comments on my run from Tom Brimlow. One that said, oh, nice last rep. And then the next comment, which said, oh, sorry, I thought I was commenting on Jack's run. Oh, yours wasn't too bad too, just because Jack ran faster than me in the last rep.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had a little conversation on Strava in the comments about that. And then funnily enough, Tom showed up to our next Tuesday session. So I thought, this is good. So we had Tommy down there for Tuesday this week.
And, how'd he handle it?
The session we did was, we did 2x2K and then it was 3x4x1K was the plan. And I think the plan was we're going to do the 2Ks in 3:20s. And I think we'll pretty much spot on 6:40 or something like that, like exactly on 3:20 pace for the 2x2K and we're all together. And then the plan was the 1Ks were going to be a little bit faster. So I think they kind of progressed. We probably ran maybe, I don't have the splits in front of me, but maybe like a 3:13, 3:11, 3:07 or something like that. We kind of progressed into the low threes. And then it got to the end of the third rep and I was like, oh, you know, I'm just going to do 500 for this last rep. Like I feel like I've got out everything I need from this session. I don't need to absolutely smash myself for the sake of a fourth rep. Like we'd already done 7Ks of intensity. And Rob was like, yeah, I'll just do 500 as well. And then Tom was like, yep, I'll do 500. And I think Dave and Jack were going to do the K. So we kind of took off and then Rob kind of shot past because I'm like, oh, well, he's doing 500 meters. This makes sense. And then, well, we were still running quick at the time. And then Dave chased him. And then I looked down and I think we were still running like 2:57 pace or something. So we were still moving well. And then next minute, Dave and Rob just keep going around the roundabout like they can continue going. And then Tom and I finished that 500 and then Jack kept going. And I think Dave ended up running like a 2:52 last kilometer rep.
I'm just looking at it here. 2:52.
He ran 2:52 for the last K. Rob might have been like 2:57. I think Jack would have been like around 3 minutes. So those guys were flying in that last rep. And in the cool down, Dave was like, oh, it's going to be so good to run the 10K with you next week, Kyle. I'm looking forward to it. Mate, if you're dropping splits like that, not a chance where you're going to be running together. But anyway, that was good. So Tommy came down and did very well, but yeah, Dave and the other boys are flying at the moment. So that was a good session.
Yeah, Dave Vernon, he's got for his 1 kilometer, he's got 308, 304, 3 flat, 252.
Yeah, he's moving very well at the moment. So
felt average to begin with, but finished off with my fastest kilometer. Oh man, it's all relative, isn't it?
Oh, he's moving well at the moment, which was good to see. It's good to see him. He's had a few niggles and injuries the last year, but he's been running really consistently and going really well. So that was Tuesday, which was good. And then Wednesday, I reckon I had the best run I've had in my life. Like, the weather was beautiful and cool. Did an hour 45. And I think I did 23 Ks, and I reckon my heart rate was lower than what I normally get on my jogs. It was just one of those runs where everything just clicked and I felt like I could have run all day. So I feel like those runs come around maybe once every month or two. But that was it. Wednesday was probably one of the nicest runs I've had in a long time. Felt amazing. So that was a nice little confidence boost that the weather's good. And then Friday we did 2x5K threshold. So this is, I like these kind of sessions, it's kind of almost like the start of the marathon block. So that was kind of the plan, was to go out around that kind of effort. So it was just the groups we had. It was just Jack and I first, and then behind us, Chris, Luke and Rinny were running in a group of three. And then they weren't that far behind us. I remember, like, in the first kilometer, I could hear Chris like right on our heels, and then the others were right behind him. And then I think Jack and I ran maybe 330s or 331s for the first 5K. And Luke, Rinny and Chris were maybe like 20 seconds behind us, 20, 25 seconds behind us. So then Jack and I started our second rep, obviously that same just like gap in front, maybe 25 seconds. And I think we ran about 17:20, low 17:20 for the second 5K. And I felt really good in this one. I reckon like from like kilometer 2 to 4 into this, I felt like I was just kind of gliding along. That was the first time I felt like that in one of these longer sessions for a few weeks. So that was really good. So I think we ran maybe 3:28, 3:29 pace for that second five.
And then 17:23.
And Chris and Luke are like right behind us. And then I look at their second rep and they've gone and run like 17:20 for their second 5K. So I think they ran like 3 seconds faster than us. So they were absolutely flying. So I think Rennie was off the back of them as well. Like, she's moving really well. So that was a really good session. I was really happy with that. And yeah, felt good. And then we ticked off another 2.5 hours this morning. And the highlight of my last fortnight was we were running around Burley Headland this morning. We headed all the way south. And all of a sudden I'm like, Jesus, a lot of muscly people running towards us at the moment. And then clicked on very quickly that Mega Run must have started at Talabudra Creek and we're running around Burley Headland.
All right.
And there's this nice spot on the headland where as you run up out of the trees, you just kind of veer to the left and you got this beautiful view of the sunrise over the ocean. And as we're coming around this corner, I noticed that basically the whole of Mega Run were, you know, filming their live TikToks as they go around the corner. You know, they were literally all running with their phones in front of their faces.
And what's just Mega Run? What is group,
that? Oh, do we need to get into it? Anyway. Well, I don't think we need to give them much airtime.
Is okay.
It's where all the Gold Coast gym goers go for their run group once a week. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh, right. So it's an organized thing. It's a regular thing, isn't it?
They've got Instagram. How have you not? Tom, you need to get back on Instagram. They're everywhere. Anyway.
Mega Run.
Anyway, okay. They were just coming around to this corner with all their phones up and my big head would have been right in the middle of their shot, which I thought was very funny. So I've ruined a few Mega Runs stories for the morning. So that was my highlight of the run. But I've never seen so many people filming while they're on a run. So that
beautiful.
Probably sums up that group. So good on them for getting out and getting some content for the morning. That was good to
Absolutely.
See. But otherwise, Absolutely. Yeah, I've been running well, feeling good. But that's
good.
My training week, Tom. But run us through your last couple of weeks. What's been happening?
Can I say from the outset, this week I've had the biggest training week that I have had in 3 months. I've hit Why about 70K Tom? This week. I've done 70K because I've been able to run, well, not been able to run, I've had to run at all times a day. So yeah, Teresa and I, we welcomed our first baby into the world, I think, was it last Wednesday? So about 10 days ago. So little Heidi was born last Wednesday. So it's been an absolutely marvelous last 10 days or 9 days. So incredible, absolutely incredible. But yeah, I took before Heidi was actually born, I went and looked on your Strava at the times of day that you ran when Elsie was first in the world. And I think you said to me nothing before 2 o'clock is what you were running. So yeah, I've run at 7 o'clock at night. I've run at 5 in the morning. I've run at midday. So yeah, it's been a huge week. But yeah, little Heidi, she's doing well. She's feeding well. She's sleeping pretty well, actually. Touch wood. at the moment. But yeah, it's wonderful.
In the middle of your training camp. So you're back.
Yeah. So
training camp and the next couple of weeks, Tom. The marathon is back on.
And as luck would have it, she came during the Easter holidays for teachers. So I've still got a couple of weeks of leave that I'm going to take at the moment. So yeah, so it's kind of semi-pro life, Kyle. The fact that I don't have to go back to work for another week for parental leave. So it's semi-pro life, but yeah, I was supposed to run with you last Thursday, wasn't it? But yeah. I didn't turn up. And you did give me the card, the get out of jail card, as in you've just got a baby.
I can't say I was surprised. I kind of showed up and went, no, yeah, that's kind of what I thought was going to happen.
I think that was the only time that I'd made run plans with anyone in these 10 days for that exact reason, because you just can't guarantee what's going to happen, can you, during the night? But
that's exactly right.
But no, we're very happy, Teresa and I. Mate. And very yeah, it gives you a whole different perspective on life, doesn't it? So
sure does.
I think you said to me a while ago that you don't know what you did before you had a baby, before Elsie came along. So it is that kind of thing, isn't it? You're just like, wow, your life changes completely. So
that's yeah, right.
Nappy changing, swaddling, all those kind of things. My searching pages on Google are no longer shoes or races. It's swaddling technique and, you know, best things like that. Arms across or arms down, those kind of things. But yes, but apart from that, yeah, as I said, the training is actually going pretty well. I did the session on Friday with you guys. I managed to get out to Narang yesterday to do an old favourite loop, Kyle, a 17-kilometre loop, not up the goat climb, but straight up three hills, and then out and around the medium loop, the 17K, which is one of my favourites. Because I was thinking, you know, if you run up the 2.0 goat climb, it is a pretty hard and long climb to run the whole way up, but three hills is a bit gentler, isn't it? It's a bit slower. You can get a bit of a slow sort of pace going up there. So I'm trying to get a bit of climbing in, because I'm looking at maybe in the raw in June doing the 25K there. And I know there's some big long climbs. So yeah, up three hills or up around last hill to gate in the reverse direction, you can get sort of 3 or 4 kilometres before you get to the top of the goat junction.
Yeah.
For some long, slow climbs. But yeah, I've
very good.
Bit more training this week, maybe 75K.
Yeah,
probably just be, let's not say that too. Last time I said I was back, that's when my calf went. So, but hearing you guys talk about all the races is very motivating as well. I've got a bit of a list to my right hand side here of things that I might be interested in. But again, I think I'm living in a bit of a fantasy world, because I don't decide, do I?
Nope.
I don't decide. I'm actually
Marathon, it's down the road. That's about all you can lock in for the year, I reckon.
Yeah. And who allows you to enter on race day as well, as what I've been looking at? If there's no enter on race day, then I'm like, well, that's no good for newborn parents, is it? Like,
no, not at all.
Because you basically decide at 3 a.m. whether it's possible or not. All right. On that note, let's jump over to our interview with Tim Walsh from Dead Cow Gully. He's going to talk us through for about half an hour the overview from Dead Cow. We've got a very special guest with us here. We've got Tim from Dead Cow Gully, who's joined us, race director Tim. He's going to give us a bit of an overview on what was a remarkably wonderful event over the weekend and incredibly successful. Dead Cow Gully, it's quickly becoming a favourite for last one standing for people, certainly in southeast Queensland, and I guess in the years to come, maybe internationally as well. So, Tim, first of all, thanks very much for joining us, and just give us a little bit of an insight into the history of Dead Cow Gully for those who aren't quite aware of where it came from or where the idea came from.
Yeah, no worries. But thanks for having me on, Tom and Kyle. So basically, I was training for a last one standing event myself. So I headed on to Oxley at Clint Eastwood, and I just linked up with the Brisbane Trail Runners. And they were just raving about this format. They were just saying how good it is and how different it is to point to point. You can actually talk to people and socialize, and you all come back to this one meeting spot each loop. And it's a rare event where the an amateur runner who's doing park run can run alongside someone who's run 100 miles or 200 miles. So yeah, it seemed really cool, and I drove home from this training run at Oxley, and I just couldn't get that out of my mind, the 6.7. And I wasn't really thinking about my own running. I was thinking about, God, I reckon I can do a course on my parents' property back in Anango, and I just sort of thought, where would we start? Where could we go? And I literally drove straight home and started pacing out and doing measurements. And over the next few days, I thought I had a course. And initially, Dead Cow Gully wasn't in the in the course. I thought it was a bit too rough.
Yep.
But when I went down there and walked through there, I'm like, God, because it'd been probably 20 years since I'd walked through the gully. And I thought, oh, God, this could actually make the event. And it's a pretty cool name as well, Dead Cow Gully. So, yeah, it happened really quickly, mate. And within a couple of weeks, I sort of formed a company and started working on a website. And it just happened really quickly from there. Yep. So,
I think the name Dead Cow Gully, like, is a big point of difference that on other Last One Standings. You know, they're all starting to get really good names, but like you said, Dead Cow Gully, it's scary for the person even just to fill out the entry form, you know, with a name like that. And some of the great ultras around the world have really cool names to them. And I must admit, the reading the website that you've got and the history of Dead Cow Gully, it's pretty extraordinary. And just talk us through the course then itself. There's a couple of spots on it that you've given a few pretty cool names to it, apart from Dead Cow Gully. What else have we got on the loop?
Yeah, well, just for listeners, Dead Cow Gully, the name itself comes from an incident many years ago where my dad and I were mustering a paddock and I saw something in the creek. It looked like it was hanging off some tree roots. And as I approached it, it was a dead cow. And what had happened is it's probably slipped off the edge of the creek, and instead of rolling into the gully, it was actually entangled in these protruding tree roots. So you could actually walk underneath the dead beast and look up, like it was it was 2 meters airborne. So we'd never seen it before, and we haven't seen it since.
Yep. Yeah,
and obviously the flooding has washed away the skeleton since. But yeah, that's Dead Cow Gully, and it's really cool, Tom. So it's you've got home base, which is at the farm. You've got all the old sheds. You've got the farmhouse where I live, and we set off. And you've got 2 km of relatively flat course. You're quite exposed. So on Saturday, if it's a hot day, it's not such a nice stretch to run because there's no shade. So it starts off with an okay track, but then it gradually deteriorates and becomes a bit rougher, and there's a bit of erosion, and then it kind of turns into like a rough tractor track. And then you hit the gully at about the 2K mark, and then that's when it becomes a proper trail and you've got a lot more shade. So the gully itself would be about probably 650 metres.
Yep.
And, that's just a series of – it's just you're following the gully and you've got lots of sort of cool kind of features, like you've got the big dirt sides of the gully wall. You've got all these different sort of dead trees and roots protruding out, and you've got Lantana down there, and it's pretty wild. And then you come out and you're just on a slash track. You loop – around the back boundary fence, you eventually hit the cow track, which is about at least 2K, probably more than 2K, but it's just a single cow track which runners go on. It's single file running, and I think it's very unique. Like, I'm not sure there's any other backyard ultras that have this, and it's just this lovely meandering track which kind of goes in and out of the gully and follows the fence line, and then you come to a section some people call Razor Ridge, where you're really close to the fence and you could potentially do some damage if you're not paying attention. And if you go the other way, you're actually in the gully, tumbling down into the gully. So they call that Razor Ridge. And, you eventually come out to this lovely kind of pasture paddock, which some people call the park or the cultivation paddock, and it's just a lovely slash track along the gully, and it's just this lovely big loop all the way home.
The photos that you put up from the nighttime with the, you know, the red sort of lights and the lanterns, look, that was one of the most formidable looking things I've seen in an ultra. And, you know, people talk about hallucinations, and so to go through is that through Dead Cow Gully itself, that part where the, where you put the red light, the lights up, the lanterns?
Yeah, yeah. So I thought this is the first year I've put tiki torches in the gully. So I went to Bunnings and splashed out. And the first light is a tiki torch, which is sort of impaled in the cow skull. So it's straight through the eye socket. So, and then when you go down in there, there's a light probably every 15 meters. And yeah, it's really cool. And this big overhanging tree section, I just lit that up.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty magical.
It sounds like you're starting to mess with the runners as well now. Like you're enjoying this as a race director. You've had the couple of years where you're like, I'm on your side. Now you're kind of like, well, I'm just going to make this a bit tougher for you now. Now I'm going to play mind games with you. So,
yeah, well, I mean, there's got to be fun in this for both of us, you know. Absolutely. I need to get through the event somehow.
That's awesome. All right, let's go through the results itself, and then you can, I guess, talk us through, you know, how you viewed this actually unfolding as a race director. So, 195 starters, first of all, that's an extraordinary large number. Were you surprised at how many that you got this year?
Well, look, I knew it would be close to 200. So what I did is I sold about 220 tickets.
Yeah.
And usually people drop out beforehand. So I was estimating about 200 or close to 200. So that was expected. But what I wasn't expecting, Tom, was just there was just a huge amount of spectators and caravans and camper vans, and we actually didn't have enough camping spots in the end. It was just crazy. So, it was just like tent city.
And on the last episode, we talked about some of the names who were on the start list, and we were having a good laugh through some of the names. Did they all turn up? Did Vladimir Putin turn up and Kim Jong-un and I think Usain Bolt was on there and Peppa Pig and things like that? How did you, did you unmask those people?
Well, mate, there was one guy wanted to keep his name anonymous, so I thought, how am I going to do that? And so I just came up with Peppa Pig. And then I thought, why not we just throw in a few more characters in here? And if people drop out or if the waitlist entries are filled, I could just basically slot their name in with someone like Usain Bolt. I could just quickly slot their name in. So, yeah, it kind of served a purpose. And, something had a bit of a giggle.
So 13 made the actual miler, didn't they? 13 people made the 24 laps this year. The great photo that you put up of the 13, they didn't look particularly happy. I think Kyle and I talked about that in the week. We were like, it's not the cheeriest of photos that we've seen of the 13 people to make the miler. That must be a pretty big moment. Is that the first moment from a race director that you look forward to, or is the first nightfall the first big moment?
Well, the big one in terms of the social media coverage and where people get interested is probably, that 24 hours onwards. That's when it gets interesting. And I was living a life of luxury, so I went to bed at around 7:30, 8 o'clock that night, and I handed it over to John Drysdale, so he did the night shift. I went to bed, there were 65 runners remaining, and I was thinking, well, this is pretty good, right? And then when I took over the shift, there was like 16 left. That was like at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, John, what the hell happened? I was just very confused. I thought there would have been a lot more because the previous year, Tom, there was 23, I think 22 or 23 that made the 100 miles.
Yep.
So this was a big drop off. And I think what happened, mate, is we had quite a warm day. It got to maybe 29, possibly 30 degrees. And then we had a massive temperature swing to 9 degrees. So there was like a 20 degree swing, and it just knocked everyone around. Like, they were, 1 minute they were hot, and then a few hours later they were shivering cold. I was actually very surprised, but it just shows you what the weather can do.
Yes, absolutely. What is it about that the nighttime that makes it such a struggle as opposed to the day?
You have less to look at. You've got the gully to look forward to because you've got the tiki torches. But when you hit the night, you're already hurting and you've already experienced a pretty damn hot day. And I think it's from a lot of runners, they said it was just so hard to leave the chair. Like, if you come back shivering because you've been sweating, right? You come back shivering, and just when those whistles blow, it's just like, oh, bloody hell. You know, it's just if the temperature was still fairly warm, it would have been a lot easier. But when it dropped, it was just the shower and the campfire were just so inviting and so alluring. It was just like, you know, stuff this. Let's just pull out at this point.
It must be, I don't know, it must be a nice moment to blow the whistle and get them up out of the chair, you know, because, you know, they'd sit there for as long as they could if you didn't blow that whistle. So there must be a kind of a happy moment where you just go, okay, guys and girls, it's time to go again, blow the whistle, and up they get.
I love blowing the whistle, mate. And when the event's over, the next morning when everyone's sort of waking up and like the event's over and the winners wake up, I usually get out there and blow the whistles again, and people sort of get goosebumps and get a bit of trauma.
That's awesome. Great. All right, let's go through from 10th and 9th. Well, in 10th and 9th, we had Mick Freeman 30 loops and Seb Durl in 30 loops. What did you take from those two guys from their performance? Yep.
So Mick was a dark horse. He's the best performing local. He got 28 loops last year. So, yeah, no surprises there. Mick would have kept going, but he couldn't hold down any food for a few loops and just eventually just sort of faded. So he took off from 31 but turned back. Seb Durl was a real surprise package. I don't know much about him, but he just looked really good out there, very confident, very like a really good attitude, and he'll be a dark horse for next year, mate, because I think he's a physio from Brisbane. Do you guys know much about him?
His name hasn't come up in things that we've talked about, so not too much. When you say local for Mick, where's your boundaries for local? Are you talking Nanango local or?
Yeah, it was South Burnett. So he's from Kingaroy. Yep. Not too far away, the next town over.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. 31 loops timed out on 32 was Alex McCann. Was he the only person to time out in that sort of top 15 or 20? Is it unusual for people to time out on loops? I mean, how do most people drop out? Is it they go out and turn back as opposed to timing out and not making it back on the hour?
Yeah, I think when you get to that stage, when people have injuries and a lot of people do turn back. They might do a few hundred metres. They could get up to the cattle yards and then just turn back. Alex, incredible guy. So last year, just to give people some history, last year he looked dead and buried at around loop 15, 16. And I just sort of said, mate, keep going. And he was dragging his ass across the line, getting in at 57, 58 minutes. Like the whistles were already blowing. And he managed to do 26 loops in that fashion last year. And he kept going and going and going. And then, this year he something similar. So severe heat stroke on day one, and then somehow he pulled through. And, I think he's a real future star, this guy. Like, he's got a really good attitude, and he really has. Not many people go to the razor wire for 10 or 15 loops, but he does.
Yeah. So the timing is an interesting one, because we'll talk about Sean in a moment, but Sean Lyons is well known in our sort of group for being that person who flies under the radar, is often at the back of the group for loops, and we know that Sean will often run pretty close to the hour for these kind of events and hang in there. So was Alex doing a similar thing, coming in on 56, 57 minutes and then going straight back out? Was that sort of his tactic?
Yeah, he generally does the slower loops, and a lot of people, it rattles them. If they come in too late, they start to panic and freak out and they get all flustered. Whereas the guys who can stay cool and calm and collected, they realise that they can carry this on for a long time. It doesn't mean that your race is over.
Does sleep come into it though then? Like if you're doing 55 minutes every single lap, you know, does it get to a point where you're just not getting the 10 minutes or the 15 minutes the other runners are to even close your eyes? Does that become a factor deep into the race?
Yeah, look, I think if you're doing over 2 days, that would definitely come into it. If you're doing stuff like Phil Gore and Ryan Crawford, yeah, I don't think you could go that close to the wire. In saying that, though, Rob Parsons, I think he was generally coming in around 52 minutes.
Yep.
But he had enough time to sort of shut his eyes and switch off for a while.
Yeah. So just in front of Alex was Chris Van Leer. Turn back on loop 34 you had in the notes for that one. So what can you tell us about Chris?
I don't know much about Chris. I know he did the 24 last year. He was in that group, like with Sean O, Peter. All these guys, they came back and did the 24 again. Unfortunately, I just don't know much about him, but I just think it caught up with him, just two fairly warm days.
And then in front of him, so as we said, our good mate Sean, we actually call him the legend of Sean down here. His nickname is Telos, so the legend of Sean, because he's becoming a bit of a cult favourite down here on Southeast Queensland. So Sean was 36 laps and Reece Williams as well on 36 laps as well. Reece turned back on 36 you had. So, yeah, a little bit about Sean and Reece, how you saw their race unfolding.
Well, yeah, Sean is another guy I don't know that well, but he definitely flies under the radar. Like someone like Reece, I'm not sure if you know him, he's a real character.
Yeah,
he's very cheeky, quick wit. There's other guys that just fly under the radar, and I think Sean's one of them. And I took notice this year because it's like, oh, holy hell, he's actually a serious competitor here. And he's at the back of the pack, and he just keeps going and going, and nothing seems to faze him. Maybe you can tell me more about him, but I'm not sure if he's got ambitions to go big, but it looks like in better conditions he'd be a 40-plus runner, don't you think?
Yeah, Kyle, you can maybe chip in here. Tell Tim a little bit about Sean and his background, because Kyle's actually gone, you know, we did a bit of a last one standing kind of thing down here, Tim, where we just went for 12 hours. We wanted to see what it was like a few years ago. So Kyle ran with Sean doing loop after loop, and yeah, Kyle might be able to fill it a bit more.
I remember that day that we did it, and just even from like the first or second lap, Sean was about 10 minutes behind the rest of the group, and we all kind of sat down and were like, what is this guy doing? Sean, what are you doing? Like, why are you taking so long? Like, how are you so slow? And he pretty much ran the strongest for the entire day. Like, he's so calculated, and pretty much every race like this that he's done the similar strategy, but every time he's done it, he's improved. Mm-hmm. So I run with Sean at least once a week, and he's very methodical in how he plans these things. He doesn't really kind of tell people, or he's not outspoken like that, but I think he loves this type of format, and he's tactical. He likes that. He's got no ego about him at all early in these races. And I think that's a really good trait in these types of ones. And Sean's perfect for it, because he'll race the exact same lap one as he will, you know, the last lap that he's left. So I think he will go much longer. Like, I think every time he's done it, he's learned something. And yeah, I think he's definitely got 40 plus in him.
And you wouldn't, a lot of the lead runners, Kyle, wouldn't see Sean for a long time, would they? For over a day, they wouldn't even know he's there.
No, and it was similar for us. Like, he'd come in and just sit down, have his food, and he'd be gone. As soon as we started, we'd run off, and he'd just do his own thing. He wasn't fazed by what everyone else was doing. And I think that's kind of always good to see in these, watching how people kind of interact. And I suppose, Tim, I'd be interested in, like, how that first kind of day unfolded. Was there kind of tactics in how people were attacking it? Like, was there certain guys that were going out kind of trying to run faster loops? Would there be people trying to, you know, get in first, or were they all doing their own thing pretty well?
Look, I think the worst thing you can do is get on social media and just talk up a really big game and have this big countdown, and you're putting so much expectation on yourself, and you start overthinking things. And whereas, someone like Sean O, Mick Freeman, the people at the back of the pack, they just sort of quietly go about their business, and they're like these silent assassins which are slaying dragons, and you wouldn't even know what they're doing. And you just, all of a sudden, they're in the top 10.
Yep.
So, I think that the number one tip would be to run your own pace. Don't try to keep up with Ryan Crawford. That's a bad move. Don't try to replicate what he's doing, because you're just going to burn out really quickly. So just find out what your natural pace is. If it's a hot day, you've just got to try to survive. And it makes sense to do a slower loop if it is hot. Like it does not make sense to me doing a 40-minute loop when it's 30 degrees or plus. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. So let's go to Adam Fox then and Barry Loveday. 38 loops, both of them together. So Barry took out last year's, am I correct there, with 37 loops, I think I've got in my notes.
That's right.
Yeah. So he's gone the same distance, and, of course, his tag was left on the fence for the whole year, so that's quite a good tradition that you've got going at Dead Cow Gully, that the winner leaves their tag up. So that, I mean, the feeling that I got from your social media post was that it was a bit of a shock moment that the two of them pulled out together and went at 38. Can you embellish a bit more on that?
Yeah, so Barry's a guy who could look like he's going really badly. Even in the first day, it looks like, you know, things aren't going well. He's not running smoothly, but he's the type of guy that kind of hangs around, and you can't really judge from his running style how he's going, because he's got such a strong mental game. And even last year, a lot of people thought, you know, this guy's going to drop out any second. And that was on day one. And so Barry's going to drop out any second here, but he won the damn thing. But this time around, I think he just wasn't feeling it. And something else to consider, guys, is we do have the Masters coming up in 8 weeks from now. So it kind of has to be in the back of your mind. Like if you're going to run with Harvey Lewis and Bill Gore and the big guns, do you really want to, do you want to spend everything in the bank on this event?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's the case with Barry, but I just don't think he just wasn't in it this year, either physically or mentally, I'm not sure. Adam Fox, he was probably the biggest dark horse of them all. He really, from 19 loops at Old Mate's Backyard Ultra to, was it 36 this time or 37?
Yeah, I had him down here as 38, him and Barry together 38. On 38, yep.
Yeah, well, that's massive, isn't it? That's a huge improvement. So, yeah, he had a really strong mental game. What really affected him was the cold nights. He didn't like that at all. So he's from Cairns, and the heat didn't bother him, but just that cold, he just...
That's true.
But I think he was spent. I think he was spent. He pushed it to the limit, and you know, maybe he could have done one or more, but yeah, he was done.
And is there a bit of enjoyment for you when you see these same characters come back year after year, that you start to play the game as maybe in your head you're predicting how many more they've got left? Like you said, you're looking at Barry thinking, okay, he looks pretty tired after 15, but then he keeps going. You must be getting a real sense of picking up on the signs or the tells of people that come back year after year as to how they're feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to tell what's going through someone's head. And I mean, sometimes I catch up with crew and find out what's going on behind the scenes, but it was hotter this year, that's for sure. And a lot of people mentioned it was a lot warmer. So it was a few degrees cooler the previous year. And but guys, I think there's something else happening at play here. And I think if you look at tennis, you look at the big three, like, you know, back in the day you had Rafa, you had Nadal, you had Djokovic. Something is happening with Backyard Ultra in Australia. It's like Ryan and Phil, probably Rob Parsons. They're so far ahead of everyone else. And people keep talking, oh, you know, people thought at Dead Cow Gully, you know, we're easily going to do 60, we're going to do 70. Yep. It's easier said than done. These guys are just freaks, and they happen to be in the one event where they were running together, and that's why we got the big number. If you have one of the big three on their own, not many people can match them. Like, I think everyone else is about 30 loops behind.
Yeah.
So these guys are real exceptions to, and they're so far ahead of anyone. I think we just have to taper our expectations a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, we were just talking in the week about how many possible loops Ryan had left, you know, and you're looking at it, I think his personal best is 75, isn't it? I think his best loops are. So he's a day and a half away from where his end point has been, and he's only just past halfway. So, yeah, it appears, based on numbers, that they are so far ahead of everyone else, as you said. Kyle, James Blanton, I mean, we know a little bit about him. Do you want to give Tim a little bit of a background? Because, Tim, I'm not sure if you know James or have come across him in the past, but Kyle knows a little bit about him. And
yeah, James has run kind of good, like 100Ks and a few 100-milers over the last few years, and he's kind of just stuck to the traditional kind of ultra distances as people start off with some good races. And he had a really good run at Tarawera this year, but this is the first time I think he's really focused on having a crack at one of these types of events. Like, obviously he's done them before, but this was the first time I think we kind of saw his potential in these type of events. Like, it was a big, I think this was a big, pretty big PB for him. And I think he's still learning it. I think he's got a lot of potential just over the obviously shorter things, but it kind of surprised me as well. Like, I was kind of looking at this race and looked at the list, and I thought, you know, Ryan's, you know, I don't think anyone's going to beat Ryan. Maybe Barry will go with him and push him into the 40s or maybe 50, but I didn't really pick James going into the 40s. So he kind of probably surprised me as well. But, you know, what a race from him. And obviously I saw your post go up about his injury popped up, and I thought, you know, that's, I don't know how anyone that could get to that point, being 40 hours into a run, pick up an injury and not let that affect them or be there out. Like, I think unless you've been there and been 40 hours in, you're probably almost looking for a reason, you know, to say, oh, I have to stop because, you know, I can't help this. It's just an injury. I need to stop. So I think that was a kind of an experience that he had that, you know, it was always going to be a tough for him to go through, but he surprised me. And anyone that runs 40 laps, and I think, like you guys were talking about before with the big three, I think because we've seen guys go 70, 80, 90, you know, hit 100 hours now in the last year, we kind of forget that like 30 or 40 hours is bloody massive. Like, it's such a long time to run. We kind of just think these big numbers and you're like, oh, you know, 20 hours, what are these people doing? But anyone that's running 30, 40 hours is absolutely unbelievable. So I was stoked to see James, you know, smash it. And I think, you know, all the guys that went obviously over a day, it's incredible. But, you know, 40 hours is a massive effort for, you know, someone that's only done a couple.
Yeah, so Tim, what did you note from James before we get on to Ryan?
Well, again, James I didn't know much about. I mean, he probably should have been a dark horse, but he's one of these guys who ran 30 loops last year, but I just didn't know he was there, if that makes sense. Like, other people, they're kind of, they're either smart-ass jokes or you recognise their name, or if they're out crossing the line first, you recognise them. But James, for some reason, he just sort of blended in last year, and I didn't really get to meet him properly, but when he was in the final four or five, I kind of looked him up and I thought, oh shit, okay, this guy's a legit runner. And then I started speaking to his crew, Kitty and his partner, and yeah, really interesting guy. And I think if he didn't get the ankle injury, I think they would have got to about 48. Like, his mind was there. I don't think he was that delirious. I think he could have, you know, at least got to 7 a.m. that morning. But it was just unfortunate, mate, with the ankle. But, you know, that's still a big, massive total, isn't it? I think this guy, I think if he signs up for other backyard ultras, I think he's a real threat for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And like Kyle saying, I think we have kind of got lost with the numbers over the years. You know, there was a sense of awe when people were running for 30 hours at the very beginning, 30, 35, and then these numbers, they've been pushed out to, you know, the world record of just over 100. And it, as a number down on paper, it doesn't look any difference. But you're talking about going from 41 to, you know, 48. That's seven more hours. That's another 50 kilometres. Yeah. Like, you tell anyone to go and run 50 kilometres after they've just run for 40 hours. That's a big ask, isn't it? Even these tiny increments of making the next daylight for James, it's another big step up to add on another 7 hours.
Yeah, and it's so easy for spectators and for me, because we all want the big number. We want them to go that one more loop, but they're the ones doing it. They're the ones going through it, and it's so easy for us to want them to keep going, but it's just I think it would be hellish each loop. You know, your body's breaking down. You're probably starting to get delirious, and it's so easy for me to say, come on, mate, just a few more loops. Let's break the course record.
Yeah,
and I'd go off and grab a hot coffee and a hot shower, and they're out there slogging it out.
Yeah. All right, let's get to Ryan Crawford then. So there wasn't a particularly long assist. There was only sort of three laps, I think, between James and Ryan. But what did you take away from Ryan? Was he just warming up? Did he have a lot more in the bank?
Well, Ryan actually, he let me know after the event was finished that he twinged his back at work, and he was almost going to pull out of the event. So something happened at work. He had a lower back issue, and he was not running or doing anything. He just went to physio, was icing it, really didn't think he'd go well, but he managed to still win it. So, yeah, Ryan, he's got such a strong mental game, and he's just so far ahead of anyone else, and I think he's really fired up for the Masters, which is coming up. And once he goes over 30 hours, he's just really hard to beat. If no medical issues come up and he's over 30 hours, it's like, well, yeah, it must be so intimidating for people who actually do want to win these things if he's in the event.
I think Kyle and I talked about in the week about surely if Ryan Crawford's on the start line, the race stops and it just becomes your own battle. I mean, that's ideally what Dead Cow, Last One Standing is all about. It's supposed to be an individual pursuit of distances, but for those who are keen on eventually winning one of these, surely if Ryan's there next to you on lap one, you think, oh no, like it's almost an impossible task, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, well, he's got an aura around him because, you know, I mentioned on the mic to the spectators there, I said, you know, he's number six in the world in terms of backyard ultras. Like, this is a world athlete here, him and Phil. So, it's just, and, you know, he was 30 loops ahead of anyone else. I think Barry Loveday was the next in line. I think he's registered 45 at Clint Eastwood. So, even if you can run with Ryan and gain some insight, and I think eventually people will get there, but Ryan is obsessed and he really wants it. And you've got to ask yourself too, would you really want that life? Would you want to get 4 hours sleep and run a marathon before work? Is that the type of life you want? I certainly wouldn't want it. There's no way I would do it. So how badly do you want it?
he's a special athlete, Ryan. So look, Tim, before we let you go, any other sort of heartwarming moments from the event yourself, things that you saw maybe early on, people pulling out after a couple of laps, or people who were just going there to achieve, you know, relatively smaller gains when you compare them to the front end people? What were some things that you saw at the other end of the field?
Those first few loops, people are really getting close to the to timing out. So what happens is the third whistle has blown, and you hear in the crowd, oh, someone's coming, get out of the way, get out of the way. And someone just comes cannonballing down the into the starting crowd, almost knocking me out. And the whole crowd is like, it's like a guard of honor as they come through. And sometimes they go through and there's 10 seconds left and everyone's saying, get back in, get back in, get back in. I was talking to James, that actually inspired James, like those little moments at the lower end. So we're talking 1 to 5 loops. There's a lot of drama in those early loops. So, and these are just people who've done parkrun and they want to, get a PB in distance.
And that must give you a lot of joy as a race director, because people often focus on the end, don't they? The top 10 who are left, but you know, the people at the start who are, as you said, just trying to improve their distance from parkrun, that must give you a huge amount of joy and motivation as someone who's organised this.
I think so, mate. And I think the best way of looking at it is is you're all playing your role in the end total. So it's like you're running as a collective. We all play a role, and everyone peels off at different points. And Ryan's end total with 42. I mean, even if you've done five or six loops, you've kind of played your part in that. You've played your role. Mm. You've done the same loop, and everyone's kind of pushed this last one standing to that total. If that kind of makes sense, particularly. Yeah. Particularly in that final 10 or final 15, that's when you play a really big role in the eventual winner. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, mate, it's a wonderful event. And, you know, from us in Southeast Queensland, we appreciate you putting it on. It's every single person that's been out there. Trav Island from Run Down Under is a good mate. He did it last year as well. And he just raved about it. You know, having seen Sean and spoken to Scott and James, they were just blown away by how awesome the event is. It's building year after year after year, and long may it continue. So what's next for you in the next couple of months?
Well, thanks for that, mate. Very kind words. I'd love to see you guys come out if you're...
Kyle's a roadrunner. Kyle's left trails. He's become a roadrunner.
I will come out at some point. Come on. I'll come out at some point, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, you could even help... unclog the toilets if you're keen, mate, if you're road running.
Absolutely.
Look, it's the Masters. The Masters is coming up, and the big thing for me is just to organise everyone's gear. So we've got people from New Zealand coming over. We've got Harvey Lewis, people from WA and Victoria. So I'm just trying to get marquees and chairs and volunteer crew. That's a big one. So if anyone's listening, if you want to volunteer and help out these runners, because they're coming by themselves because of the cost. So, yeah, just if you can hit me up on Messenger, on Facebook or Instagram, we'd love to hear from you. So
what's the date for the Masters?
It's June 17. So that's a Saturday, June 17, 7 a.m. It's the first Backyard Ultra where we're doing a trail loop. And then a night loop. So it's 12 hours trail, 12 hours road, and the road is a flat 23 metres elevation per loop. It's flat, and a lot of it's bitumen. So we're really, if you're going to get a big total, I think all the stars are aligned, you know. Yeah.
Beautiful. Awesome, mate. Well, we'll let you go. It is Sunday afternoon, so it's family time this afternoon. So thank you very much again for joining us on Racing News. As I said, we've talked about this for the last couple of years, and we just wanted to get a different perspective from the race director as opposed to the athlete. So, yeah, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, mate.
No worries. All right, so there's the interview with Tim. Kyle, what were your takeaways from chatting to Tim there in terms of Dead Cow Gully? He has invited us over there. Maybe he even said come in a volunteer role, which I quite like.
Yeah, I think I might start with that. Like, every time we talk about these races, I get more intrigued and interested in going into one just to see what it's like. I feel like we talk about it so much, but yeah, what an event! Like, he runs a good event there, and like you said, everyone that's been there has just raved about it. I haven't heard a negative thing come out of it at all. So, no, it's definitely an event I need to get up and just be a part of. It just sounds like it's a fun weekend. Even, you know, I read Sean's Facebook post today about his recap of the event, and it just makes you want to be around it. And I think spectating it probably is much more enjoyable than running it. But I'm sure we'll do it at some point.
I don't know whether I could be a race director, because I think I'd just taunt them and poke them too much. Like, I don't know how. Like, that's what I was saying to him. Like, year after year, when these names come back, you start to figure out what they're like and their personalities. And like when he said he put the light through the skull of the dead cow. I don't know. I think it'd be too much. You'd have to entertain yourself and just play games with them a little bit. And so maybe that's why I shouldn't be a race director. But yeah, wonderful, wonderful event, Dead Cow Gully. Yeah, everyone's talked well about it. But live as we speak, Kyle, Flirt with Dirt, round two. It's round two, isn't it, out at Coomber Bar?
It is. It is round two.
The flattest trail race you'll ever come across in your life. But I don't think we count it as trail. It's more cross country. Well, it is in the name, isn't it? Flirting with Dirt. It's your dirt. Introduction to sort of trail running. Now, Ben Dineen is our live reporter on the ground. We're not going to patch him in live for this, but he has been sending us through some results as they happen, because I think the races were at like 4 o'clock, so pretty much only half an hour ago. What have you got for us, Kyle? Any facts, any information?
So I've
All I've got is the male results for the 15K. So I'm sorry because we don't have all the results yet because this is happening as we speak, but I've got a message. Yep. But I was interested in how this would go. So Joel, who won round one, was going to be there. And I knew that David was going to run this as a bit of a hit out. So, and I knew how well he's been training, given he's been smashing us in sessions the last few weeks. And then I saw the start video pop up and Rob Clark was there as well. And I thought, oh, we've got a great little battle on our hands here. This is going to be a really good race. So then we were just waiting while we were doing that interview with Tim before for this message to come through. And I don't, have you looked at the message yet, Tom? Do you know the results?
No, I went to open it, but I don't want to open it.
So all I've got, so the first message that came through from Ben was, just got word that they're all very close at just over halfway. So that was the that was the initial word that we got. And then the results came through. So third place was Joel Ashdown. He ran 55.11. So Joel won round one, so he got third. And then there was only, I think Ben said here, he reckons, I'm looking at the, he put time, 52 seconds, I think, in the actual times he's given me between first and second.
Ooh.
Initially he said 32, but now it's 52 seconds between. So the first and second, so second place was Rob Clark in 53.57.
Yep.
And David Vernon has taken out the win in 53.05.
Wow.
So Dave's, he's got the victory. So I'm interested to hear from Dave. Obviously, I'll chat to him soon how that unfolded, but it sounds like it was close at halfway and there might have been a little kick down. So maybe he dropped one of those 252 last kilometres like he does on us at training to take the win.
That'd be interesting.
To hear, but that's a good
15
race.
Kilometres, was it?
15 kilometres.
15 so, kilometres. I'm just having a look on Strava here. Nothing's come up yet this afternoon. I was thinking maybe it popped up straight away, but there's nothing there from Dave. So, yeah, we'll have to wait on that one.
It's just come up. I've looked at 330 pace average. You got 15.19 kilometres, 330 pace. And I don't know how accurate it is, but average heart rate, 191. I don't know if he was wearing a heart rate monitor, but it looks like he was working very hard if that's even remotely accurate.
Wow.
So he's done very well there. So well done, Dave, getting the win.
That's quick, isn't it? 15K over on that. Like you said in the week, it's not particularly fast, Coomber Bar. It's not slow, but difficult to get the same pace that you would on the road out that
he's
way.
He's done well. That's right.
So I guess we'll have the other results as they, you know, in a fortnight when we talk about the other results. We'll do the female ones and the shorter distance ones as well. But yeah, Fleetwood Dirt, great event, great introduction to trail running and into, you know, getting off the road for people. And I guess building to In the Roar, which is in middle of June, and then towards the Triple Crown kind of things later in the year with Border Bolt and Coastal High as well that Steve puts on. So yeah, awesome. Now, Kyle, while we chat a little bit about trail running, I do have a little game I want to throw in the middle of our episode here, and you can play along at home, people playing in the car. So no searching online for any of these, Kyle, but what have I got here? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 7 ultras here, all 50 kilometres or thereabouts. They're pretty, and they're all ones that I know that you've done. Actually, only one of them, you've never done it. There's only one that you haven't done. So I tell you what, I'm going to take that one out. Let's call it 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I know you've done all 6 of these. I'm going to give you an elevation for 50 kilometres, and I want to see if you can tell me what the event was.
Or what range are we? Like, obviously, it's races I've done. Is it Queensland? Or is there any non-Queensland races in there?
There are 2 from non-Queensland.
Yes, okay. I'm assuming I know what they are because I haven't done that many 50Ks out of Queensland.
So let's see how we go. This could be an absolute flop, this game, but but we'll see how
it goes. I'll do my best. This could go... Okay.
All right.
Hit me with first.
Let's go 1,488 metres for a 50-kilometre race.
1,004, and I've done it. Okay.
Yep.
Is this a low-key race, Tom?
Yes, it is a low-key race. Yep.
I'm going to go Misty Mountain.
Oh, that, no.
Because I reckon it's similar to that. Okay, it's not Misty Mountain.
It could well be. I might have failed on the first one here. Have you done Glasshouse 50 or have you just done Cook's Tour?
I've done Cook's Tour and I've done Flinders Tour, but I haven't done Glasshouse.
Ooh, I'm pretty close then. So that's your Glasshouse ones, 1,488.
Okay.
But that's the lowest total.
Okay.
2,450 metres for a 50K vertical. What do you reckon?
Oh, that's got to be UTA.
Yep, good. UTA. Okay. You've got that. Now, this one is just slightly shorter than a 50K. So it's actually just a marathon, this one. 1,974. It's a big, hilly marathon. What do you reckon? 1,974
meters. Marathon, and I've done it.
I'm pretty sure.
You reckon I've done it? I have not done that many hilly marathons. Okay.
Well, no, it's a marathon distance. I'll say that. It's not a marathon. It's a marathon distance.
No. Tom, you're testing me here. Is it Southeast Queensland?
No.
Marathon distance. Is that... I wanted to say 6 foot when you first said it, as far as that distance, but I don't think it's that. I think that's got a little bit less, and I have not done that anyway.
1,974. It's as hilly. That's almost 50 metres a kilometre. There's nothing tougher, surely, in Australia than this.
And it's short. It's marathon distance.
I'm hoping it was marathon distance when you did it.
So we've talked about...
We've talked about this a lot.
Yep. Is this the new Buffalo Stampede Marathon?
Yes, Kyle. He's on the money there.
Ah, see, I've done the old course, which was 3,000. That's what you had me confused.
Oh, I see. Was it 50K or was it...
No, it was 42 with 3,000 because we used to run uphill, not downhill.
Well, that's a good grab then. That's a very good answer because they've shortened that. They've lowered that elevation then, haven't they?
Well, it used to be a net uphill. You finish at the top. Now you start at the top and finish down in town. So it's dropped by 100 metres.
Because when I was looking at that online, yeah, it says net vertical gain 1974, loss 2,900.
Yeah, so it used to be the opposite.
Yes. All right.
Okay, I'm happy with that. So no, I haven't done that one that direction, but yes, that's my...
That's a good one. All right. 1,952
meters. I'm going to go... Is that Blackall? Is Blackall 19...
No. Coastal High, 1,952.
I thought Coastal High was over. That was the other one I was going between. Okay.
1,952. Now, the remaining two events, I know you've done events at these particular places, but I'm not 100% sure whether you've done the 50. So you're going to have to give me a bit of leeway.
One of them is going to be Blackall, and it's going to be 2,000, just over 2,000.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, let's play a slightly different game here. Give me the elevation for Blackall then.
Blackall's... I think it's just over. I want to say just over 2,000, or am I way off there? Or is it actually less than that? Maybe it's less. Maybe it's like 1,650 or something.
Because what have you done there? You've done the 100.
I've done the 100 there. I haven't done the 50.
Yeah. So what was the 100? Do you remember? It's mid threes, isn't it?
Mid threes, maybe.
So what's your answer for the 50K?
Okay, I'm going to go 2,050. I want to get just over 2,000.
Miles off, 1,580.
I wasn't miles off with my first guess then.
And the final one, I think if I remember talking to you a long time ago about this, your very first Kokoda was a 50K or the 48, is that right?
The 48, yes.
Yes, so you have done this one, good. So this has gone off Strava vertical, off a few people's Strava that I took this off. What do you reckon the Kokoda, the half Kokoda is the 48K?
The current one?
Yes, the current one.
I reckon it's 2,350.
Ooh, 1,729.
Really? Yep. What's everyone mentioned about how hard Kokoda is? Kokoda's easy. Put that in with my... Can we now insert what I talked about my Kokoda experience last year?
Yes, that's right. we'll give that a wide berth.
Is that really all it is?
Yep, so there you go. So there's a big range, isn't there? Because I was looking at various 50s. That's the reason I wanted to test you, because there's a massive range. You go to UTA, 2,450, and yeah, you do the... So the Glasshouse ones, the Cook's Tour, is even less than that, do you think? Do you think it's like more like 1,200?
Well, I did Cook's Tour, and it was about 800, 900. And Flinders Tour was only about 1,000 or 900. Yep. Yeah, they were way less.
Yeah, yeah. So the Glasshouse 50 is the hillier one there. That's at 1,488. There's a massive difference, is there, in the elevation over 50K?
Yeah. But those courses are always changing a little bit anyway, so I think they fluctuate a bit.
Which one do you find the toughest out of all of those in terms of elevation? Is there anything tougher than UTA?
Well, the Buffalo one I did. Like, yeah, it was three. It was but you didn't have as much downhill, so it was like it was hard because you just did a lot of climbing, but you didn't know as much downhill. So that was that was still like 3,000 meters in 42Ks is a lot of climbing, but it's probably not. It doesn't. It sounds worse than it is because you didn't have to come back down the hill. You kind of finished at the top. So. That was definitely, but UTA is hard for other reasons. But yeah, I'd probably go with that for elevation.
Well, my other game that I'm going to play in a couple of weeks with you is the checkpoint game. That was the other one I was thinking. I was like, I wonder if I name certain checkpoints, famous ones, whether Kyle would be able to tell me what race they are from in a local area.
Maybe we should get someone on that does ultras in the last few years, Tom, instead of someone that hasn't done one for a while.
You've got quite a good back catalogue, Kyle. We've seen your race catalogue. What was it, the 2014 season where you did like 40 events in a year?
I planned on doing 40 events. That was never going to happen. I probably actually looked back and did probably five of them.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump over. What else have we got? We got Wild Horse Criterion.
Wild Horse was on, yeah. And this was an interesting one. And I had a message from Carol, who did this event as well, because it was almost won entirely by females.
Yes, absolutely.
Kind of a really, yeah, I was kind of looking through the results as well. So, yeah, Eliza Brewer won the 53K. And then in the 32K, Carol Robertson, she got the win. And then I think there was female was third overall in the 21 and first in the 10K. So they've nearly won all the events. They nearly won the kids one too. So the ladies have dominated this race.
So I'll fly through the 21K races. So in the males, Pierre Crewe was third in 209, Luke Jones second, 152.55, and Dean Erasmus 152.01. So a close race there in the 21. In the females, Kerry Evans 234 in third place, Joe Irvine 202, and Tegan Porter 156. Tegan is, we talked a little bit about her a few weeks ago. She ran Alpine Classic, the Alpine Ascent, was it? Or Alpine Classic? Yeah. I can't remember the name of it.
Alpine Ascent.
But she did really well at that race down south as well. The 32 kilometres, Stuart Howliston 247 took out the win, Andrew Southwell 259 for second. Paul Gilbourne, 301 for third. And like you said, Carol Robertson. Carol's done very, very well at a lot of ultras around southeast Queensland. So 242, wins overall by 5 minutes. Second place, 259, and third place, 327. Lois McCulloch in third place. You got the 50, what is it, 53?
It's slightly odd, but I think it's because it's laps of, this is always laps of things. So I'll go through the females. So Catherine Austin was third, 7:06. Second was Tanya Well in 6:07. And Eliza Brewer took out the win overall by 1:42. She ran 4:54. That's a cracking run for a 53K one. So well done to Eliza. And then in the males, Jason Richard was third, 5:32. He was only, 11 seconds ahead of Matt Lowry in second in 5:31.53. Ben Wilson took out the male win in 4:55. So well done to everyone at Wild Horse.
Excellent. Absolutely. I'm just looking back through my notes last year. I think Brad Glover, 4:32, took out the win there last year. So I think it is. I think it's like an 11K loop, this one that they do. Roughly sort of 11, 10.5-kilometre loop around the Wild Horse Mountain up on...
Yeah,
that's kind of Glasshouse Mountains way, isn't it? Triple A racing with Alan up there. So, Kyle, that's pretty much most of the events for this week. We hope everyone really enjoyed the chat with Tim from Dead Cow Gully. It gives us a bit of an insight into how the actual weekend went. Well done to those who did Flirt with Dirt this afternoon. We'll have more of those results in a fortnight. But what have we got coming up, Kyle? Are you strapping on the bib next week? Putting the race shoes on for the GC10.
Yes, I am. I am racing the 10K next Sunday at Gold Coast Running Festival.
So you said
one of us is racing finally for the year. It's good. First race of the year.
And I'll decide Sunday morning at 3:00 in the morning whether I'll come as well. So you said you haven't done a 10K for... Have you ever raced a 10K, a proper one?
Not on the road. I mean, there are two on the track. I did Trav Island's GC50 Lead Up Series solo. That morning we just ran out there. So that's the 10K I've done on the road, but not an official big race like this. No, I haven't.
So I don't know what you will run.
Can you put me on the spot, Tom? What's your prediction? Let's see what you think.
32.10 is the number that came into my head.
32.10? Mate, have you seen the course? There's mountains on this course. I might have taken my poles. Have you heard about this course?
I've run this course. I've run the 5K out here a few times. You're definitely in shape. Definitely in shape.
I don't know about 32.10, but I thank you for the confidence in my running, Tom. But
well, that's what came to my head. I thought if I went 33, I'd probably be doing you a disservice. So what do you think? It's somewhere in the 32s?
Well, my PB is 32.56, so 32.10 would be a big run on a reasonably hilly course. It's not dead
flat.
Yeah,
but you know what? If Dave I'd be happy.
Yeah, well, Dave's going to be there. There'll be others as well, which would be good. And I'm sure there's always a few fast guys to chase. But yeah. Look, if I break 33, I'd be happy.
Okay, that's a good mark.
If I'm just over, whatever, I'm okay with it. That's roughly in my head what I'd be happy with.
Well, what sort of form do you reckon you're in for 5K at the moment? If you were to do a flat, fast 5, would you be 15:30 at the moment?
Maybe. Even the right race, if it was just parkrun, okay. Maybe, I don't know. Somewhere between 15:30, 15:40.
All right.
45, something like that.
So I reckon if you go out with the leaders for this.
What if the leaders are running like 3-minute Ks? Then I'm in big trouble. Then I might run
3-7. Go with. Always go with. Go with and see what happens. That's got to be the mark for that. Who else is running from your little training group?
I'm running. Dave's running. Well, Rob, they've got a baby on the way very soon, if not now. He's a maybe. He's a question mark. Chris is running. Luke's running. Katie from our group's running. Most of us are running, actually. So
awesome.
There'll be a lot of us down there. I don't know if Lockie's running anymore. He was thinking about running. Yep. Yeah, so there'll be a bunch of us down there. No Jack Gill. Jack's off on the trails, unfortunately. So I don't think he wanted to come down. He's the other one's been training with us, but he'll be off in his UTA prep, so I don't think he'll be there. But otherwise, yeah, there's quite a few of us going down, so I'm looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Any prize money on the line for this?
I highly doubt it, Tom, and I wouldn't have a clue. I can't say much when you're thinking about prize money. And going off the results in previous years, I probably wouldn't get any anyway, so it's all good.
And we've got a couple of runners over in Boston, haven't we? Just finally before we go.
We do.
Coming
up. Late tomorrow night.
Yep.
Or, you know, people are listening to this. It might be have already happened. So, yeah, good luck to Marty and Sunil from our little group anyway.
Yeah, and Will Kitchen's there as well, I think, as well, isn't
Will
he?
Will is there as well.
Yep. So there might be a few more people, but, yep, we'll look for those results with eagerness. All right, Kyle, there we go. It's been quite a dramatic 3 weeks for various different reasons. But life is settling back down now into some good training as we get into the winter months. And I must admit, I've got a little list here of things in front of me. I'm going to try and, as I said, I don't even know why I've written these down because, like we said, it's all depending on factors out of my control, I guess.
Now.
So I'm not going to read these out. I'm just going to keep them here. I'm going to put them next to me, leave them there.
Good idea.
And we'll go with that. But good luck in the 10K, mate. So it'll be a taper sessions this week, or you'll just train as normal?
No, we're kind of training. We just won't do a session Friday, otherwise I'm kind of just training through it. So it's not a key race. It's just what we all want to go and have a good hit out. So still do a session Tuesday and then just a short little few strides maybe Friday.
Yep. Triathletes talk about A race, B race, and C races. So maybe
I say that. Yeah, not a key race. But then you put a bib on us down on the start line. We've all got our egos get ahead of us and off we go and blow up. So I'm sure we'll go and smash ourselves. So
until you have to write the Strava comment where it comes back in. Not a key race. Big
I just
goals.
Took it easy. Got to halfway and just thought, I'm just going to jog it in because, you know, it's not a key race.
Yeah.
Hashtag, I blew up. That'll be
exactly. Exactly. All right, mate. All the best for that. And we'll look forward eagerly to those results. 32:10. I've got you down for.
Not a chance.
Beautiful. All right, buddy. Take care.
All right.
See ya.